Hey folks, I'm Simon Ward, your host for this weekly podcast. Over the years, I've come to realise that achieving one's goals as a triathlete is not possible unless you support this with good nutrition, excellent recovery, develop a robust framework through mobility and strength training, and have a happy, balanced work and family life. Each of these elements contributes to our race day performances and gives us the best chance of turning those dreams into reality. Each week, my goal is to introduce you to the experts and thought leaders in each of these fields to help you squeeze the most from your life and enjoy racing success. So, without further ado, let's crack on with this week's guest. Welcome back, Debbie Potts.
Thank you for having me back on again.
Yeah, it seems like only last week that we were chatting.
I know, it does. But this, we, I'm sure, are going to have a lot more conversations becoming in the future, because I think you're so much in line with what I do with my holistic method. Your program is so much in line. We're in different countries, but I think it's a great way to start sharing this message to athletes all around the world.
Well, we seem to have some mutual acquaintances in people like Phil Maffetone and Dan Plews and Paul Larson. So I guess we are probably thinking along the same lines. The reason I wanted to get you back so soon, Debbie, was we had a short podcast before. We talked about your holistic method. We talked about how you got the inspiration from that book, or for that book, from being diagnosed with HPA axis syndrome. And having published the podcast, I had a few questions from listeners who asked me if I could dig a bit deeper with you into this whole sort of illness, if you like, and how it was diagnosed, what treatment you underwent, what actions you did, how it's changed your life, et cetera, et cetera. So perhaps we can start right at the beginning, because I've got a feeling that I hadn't heard of HPA axis syndrome until you mentioned it. I looked it up and I recognized some terms. I just wondered if it was the way the medical profession defines things in different countries. So perhaps you could just define what HPA axis syndrome is, and then I can ask you a couple more questions on top of that.
Sure. Well, I wrote my books when all this kind of chronic fatigue disease started with me in 2013. When I wrote my book and published it in 2015, I had the word adrenal exhaustion, adrenal fatigue in my entire book. As I was writing, people started to say, which makes sense, that it's not the adrenals are not to blame specifically or individually. It's more a chain of events that happens. So HPA axis dysregulation or dysfunction is similar to what we termed adrenal fatigue, adrenal exhaustion, because it's not the adrenals. There's other things that happen before that. So there's a kind of a chain of command above the adrenal glands, starting with the brain and the hypothalamus, sends a message to the pituitary gland, to the adrenal gland, to respond to that stressor. But eventually, as we keep doing something nonstop, it becomes chronic, then we get more dysfunction. So it's ongoing. So HPA axis function becomes dysfunction or dysregulated. And that is what we called in the past adrenal, because people say that doesn't exist. It's not the adrenals aren't broken and worn down. It's just the communication system is dysfunctioned.
So would you say that this is one step further along, as in worse than chronic fatigue, but not quite what we know as ME? Or are they completely different things?
Yeah, well, ME, you're speaking of metabolic efficiency. Yeah, so I would say different. It's just different sources of chronic fatigue. So this is good timing, because today I'm having my first practical exam becoming an FDN practitioner. And this is, FDN practitioners is a functional diagnostic nutrition practitioner. This is exactly what we do as practitioners, is kind of solving the metabolic chaos, which Reed Davis, founder, terms as kind of what HPA axis dysfunction is. It's an imbalance of your hormones that starts to create this dysfunction in your entire body system. So it's not just the adrenal glands, but it's the communication, as I said, the HPA axis. The messages get, you know, not firing the hormones to tell the adrenals to fire. So it just gets this whole chaos. That's why it's so easy to just say it as metabolic chaos happens, and all the body systems pretty much get to dysfunction because of this miscommunication system, because every body system is involved with the hypothalamus and the pituitary gland. And so if things get overworked, relying on the adrenal glands responding to emergency, everything else gets put on hold because your body's got this innate intelligence to say, okay, we're under fire. We're going to die. We got to save ourselves. We're putting every other thing on hold and respond to this threat right now. And that's why our body's so smart. But if we have this so-called emergency every day, all day, you're going to have problems because everything else is going to be depressed or not functioning as well in return.
So that's pretty much saying that you're in fight or flight mode all of the time. Yeah. And there's no,
I mean, it's your adrenaline, but your cortisol, hormone cortisol, and then that cortisol gets to be excessive. So that's what we used to call adrenal fatigue. And there's different phases that we'll talk about, but yeah, adrenals and the cortisol gets be high all the time. So the adrenaline and then the cortisol responds all the time. And then the DHA hormone, the opposite of cortisol, gets out of whack. So that's kind of what the metabolic chaos is, that cortisol to DHA hormones get out of balance, which kind of is the root of a lot of these different problems.
Just to go back for those people who probably come on and, you know, that they listen to this and they'll come on and correct me. The ME that I was referring to is known as myalgic encephalomyelitis. Oh.
So, not metabolic efficiency.
But easy mistake to make. And I seem to remember that back in the 80s, when we had all the yuppies and they were snipping cocaine and working all hours and then partying all hours, a lot of people were getting run down and going to the doctor, and the doctors were saying, no, there's nothing wrong with you. You just need to rest a bit more. And it took quite a long time for people to actually, in the medical press, to admit that there was actually this sort of dysfunction known as ME, which to me now looks very similar, sounds very similar to what you've described. On the go all the time, maybe not exercising, but working hard during the day, getting the adrenaline rush from doing big deals, then going out to party, probably drinking too much, doing other stuff, not sleeping enough and recovering, and in that proper switched on, stressed out state all the time. Until, bang, something goes and you can't function. Metabolic chaos.
It's kind of accumulation, you know, over time. It just gets worse and worse. And I think it's what I was talking about in the previous podcast is that, you know, these red flags occur and we don't know, because you're thriving because you have that high adrenaline, that cortisol, you're feeling like amazing, but you don't realize you're kind of on the top end ready to break down and go into the next phase where you're not having that high cortisol that gives you that energy. But then if you keep going like that, you start to compensate and you're going to feel more fatigued and, you know, have the end result of the next phase. So it is progression. But I think what I'm trying to get across to the world is that what are these red flags and how we can identify them to know, all right, I better slow down and take control and take ownership of my life and my health. Step back and slow down, take a little break or take a week off or whatever it might be. First, of course, you have to identify your stressors, your external and internal stressors are more with functional lab testing. But a lot of times we don't know that we are just breaking ourselves down, burning the candles at both ends because we're thinking we're like on this high, right?
So perhaps you could give us an insight into what your life, your typical day would be like for Debbie Potts just before you were diagnosed, and how you were sort of riding this wave and not realizing that you were heading for a big fall.
Yeah, because we adapt to that, right? So we're just on go, and that's kind of what's called the acute phase, and then we start to get the compensate and then go towards more exhaustion. But that's why it's so sneaky. And my old life was, well, I realize a lot of this isn't necessarily training for multiple races, endurance events, but I opened my fitness studio, which is a lot of work, in 2010. So I've been training, started Ironmans way back in 2001. But when it's all kind of started when I added this additional stress. So I was running my own business starting 2010, 2009, and opened a bigger gym. And I used to get up for some reason. This is this stupid old me, like at 3:30 in the morning. So I could get to work around 4:30. I'd make this huge pitcher basically of fat coffee, bulletproof coffee. And that's, I mean, I'd two thermoses, and that's what I would consume all morning. And I would get to work so I can check emails before clients came in. So I was at work at my fitness studio at 4:30 in the morning. And then I'd had clients around 5:15 start to come in, and we'd mostly group training classes back then. And then I had personal training clients, but I was also training for races at a high level. So that's, you know, I trained with Mark Allen and we do a lot of volume. And so you have four workouts per week of swimming, biking, and running to fit in, and, you know, training clients. And then you still have the admin part of your work. So you have emails and accounting and marketing and all that kind of stuff, the back end of running a business, being a small business owner. And I used to go to yoga at night. So I try to fit in yoga to relax at 5:30 PM. Then get home at, you know, done at 7:00. Then I get home at 7:30 and suddenly, you know, 8:00 and go to bed at 9:00 and start again. So that's kind of why I said life is not a race in my book I wrote, because it was, you know, by the time you wake up in the morning and you don't stop until you hit the pillow at night. So we're just non-stop racing all day long.
How long were you able to sustain that for before things started to go a bit wrong?
So I just realized this because I'm closing my business October 1st, and it's been 10 years. And it was 2013 in March approximately when I felt this big, huge weakness and, you know, gaining weight, my body changing, my fitness level just like felt like it disappeared. My heart rate was higher is one of the things I started to find in this 50K race in 2013. So say it was, you know, 2 years probably that I was sustaining that crazy schedule until I started to break down. And that's what, you know, in the FDN program I'm in right now, to be a practitioner, that's a common progression, that you have this phase that you're adapting, your body's kind of thriving, you feel alive, and then you don't know that you're, you know, you're homeostasis level of cortisol that's optimal, suddenly you're up high and you feel this sense of, you know, superhero. And then suddenly it's like, you know, I always think of it as a faucet tap of cortisol as your water that keeps dripping. You leave it on and then suddenly you keep leaving that tap, the well gets dry and then there's nothing there. And then that's kind of the compensatory phase that you don't have as much cortisol, and then it goes down lower. So you get really that hormone imbalance, which causes that disruption in your whole body system.
What was your sleep like? You said you went to bed at 9:00 and so you were getting up at 3:30. So that's 6.5 hours sleep, which probably isn't enough for an Ironman triathlete.
No.
Never mind somebody who's fitting in all the stuff in the other 17.5 hours in the day. During those 6.5 hours, what was your sleep like if your heart rate was elevated?
Yeah, that was my big thing. And that's what I can tell a lot of people. If you're waking up, if you know, you're tired but wired, is always one of the red flags that you wake up at 2 a.m. And that was the worst part, I think. I don't know, gaining weight when you're an athlete, gaining 30 pounds and you hadn't changed anything was a huge, made a huge impact on me. It was depressing. But the sleep, waking up at 2 a.m. and being wide awake is the worst. I don't know if you've ever experienced that, but it's when your cortisol and your blood sugar levels are out of whack and your low blood sugar, high cortisol, whatever it might be that's waking you up in the middle of the night is just awful. So sleep was bad. Once I started to feel the sense of fatigue and getting some research and guidance on it, I would take 45-minute naps every day, 30-minute naps, because I needed rest. But yeah, sleep is horrible when you have, you know, more of the chronic fatigue issues going on.
And what about your mental health during all this? Did you start to find that you were having issues there at all?
Well, you know, it's funny because I've learned a lot, you know, about the brain fog and memory issues are part of this metabolic chaos. You create these weak links in all these body systems, and gut health is related to brain health. So it's hard to say, you know, in FDN as a practitioner, we don't treat anything specific. You're treating everything. So you don't just say, okay, you know, depression, take this antidepressant pill. You have gut health, take this pill. It's working on treating everything. And it makes sense to me because I did feel depression, but is it because I have leaky gut and I'm not processing my food right and having malabsorption? I'm not making my amino acids that make neurotransmitters, and your, you know, serotonin's made in your gut. And then you have your gut brain connection. There's so much going on to say, okay, you know, I feel depressed, but then do I feel depressed because I just gained 30 pounds and I'm used to being lean and fit? And that really made me feel uncomfortable in my own skin. But also you get really low self-esteem because you think, I used to think everyone looked at me and said, oh my God, what did she do to herself? You know, she just started being lazy and eating ice cream and cookies on the sofa and stopped training. And I just wanted to announce to everyone, I have a problem. I gained all this weight and I just look this way because of fatigue, you know, adrenal stuff going on. And no one knew what that was. And I would probably talk about it too much trying to say, this isn't, I didn't change my exercise or my food. It's not that. So yeah, depression was a big thing.
Okay. So 2013 then, everything started to fall apart. How did you eventually get the diagnosis? How long did that take? What tests did you have to undergo? Was it taking blood? Was it having bone scans? Was it, you know, saliva samples and that sort of thing?
So I did all that. And that's what I love, you know, working now as an FDN practitioner, is that no one did this before. I didn't ever see an FDN nutritional therapy practitioners. You know, it's what happened to me. And I think a lot of people struggle with this. And this is why I'm going to be doing this as my main job now. I couldn't get help anywhere because what typical medicine does, and in the US at least, is traditional medicine, you go to a doctor, you know, you feel like when I'm gaining weight and I'm not sleeping and I'm depressed. What are they going to do? You know, they don't know what to do. I went to doctor after doctor and someone would say, okay, maybe you have, you know, they tested my liver, my hormones, which they barely test any, you know, traditional labs barely test what you need to test. And then I had just someone say you need anti-anxiety pills. I did see naturopaths, but then they do what we don't do in FDN. And they just give lab tests and they give you supplements based on those results. So if I was low progesterone hormone and low testosterone, they would give me hormones. And if I had, so I did all sorts of lab tests, but it was, the problem is, I think people do is treat the labs, not what we do is clinical correlation. Let's put this big metabolic chaos puzzle together. Let's investigate with all these different pieces that we can put into the puzzle and figure out what is going on, but not treat just these one things, these lab results, is treating everything all at once. And that's what's finally working for me. I, for years, saw different doctors and we do the stool test. We did the saliva test. I would do the nutrient test, the food sensitivity test. I spent thousands and thousands of dollars on lab tests. Part of it, I was looking back then, I wanted answers now. I wanted to be fixed right now. I wanted to get back to racing. I had, you know, already registered for Ironman Canada in 2013 and Honu Half Ironman. And I had, couldn't do anything, but I was at the time, 2013 and 14, I was just doing test after test with different naturopaths saying, okay, they don't know what they're doing. Move on to the next one. Because the big thing isn't just taking those supplements to fix you. There isn't a magic pill. So what I'm trying to get across for people, there's internal stressors that these lab tests can help identify, but external stressors and changing your lifestyle, what you eat, your sleep, is really just as important of taking those supplements. So I think for me is just was listening to all these people, but it was taking my health in my own hands and learning and taking all this information and kind of what the holistic method came from. It's like, I have to change my schedule. I have to, you know, change my workout routine. And if you had like people in your life that are energy robbers, I had to eliminate those. I had a person that was just requiring way too much time and sucking the energy out of me and really made me stressed out. So you just have to clean house outside and inside.
Was this just a buildup of information that you were thinking of and slowly changing your thought process and approach to life over a period of weeks? Or was there a particular epiphany moment where somebody said something and you thought, do you know what? I'm going to have to back off here and step away.
I think it's a good question. It's probably after I saw the you know, the ninth practitioner that I kept blaming all them for being not good practitioners. It was, I needed to take some responsibility. So I think so many people just, we don't take, as I said, ownership for our health, and we're just looking for that magic pill to get back to racing and get back. I want to, you know, get my body back, my health back. And it, that's not the only thing. And that's what the holistic method is about, your programs, about what FDN practitioners call Dress for Health Success program, that we're not doctors, but we're working on their, what they're eating, their sleep, their exercise, their stress, and the right supplements. But it's not, you can't just do the supplements, is what I really learned. And that was just probably from my own journey of like, okay, you know, practice what they preach. I'm trying to be health coach. I'm getting all these lab tests. Everyone keeps saying the same thing, take this supplement or that supplement. And I wasn't really, really getting better. So it's just starting to go, probably the aha was after I saw this last doctor who was supposed to be really good. And I mean, I saw like three different doctors in a couple of months. So it's like impatience is probably part of it. And just wanting that, the magic solution to heal me.
Typical triathlete, really. Keep going around the docks until you find one that tells you what you want to hear.
Yeah, yeah, you blame everybody.
Carry on working 20 hours a day and training for Ironman and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've taken this action, you've had this epiphany moment, you've sat down and thought, I've got to change my schedule. So did you just stop training, get rid of all of those energy vampires that you talked about? Were they changes that you made overnight, or were they gradual changes?
Well, it's been overnight, you know, and honestly, this, we're recording this is summer of 2019. I am finally just feeling better. I think a lot of it was a burden of my fitness studio, because my rent, I'm in Bellevue, Washington, which is, you know, Microsoft, tech world, Amazon, and it's very high rent. And so I was having to have this stress load of paying, you know, $8,000+ a month on rent, and how to have revenue come in, and that kind of just small business owner stress. Now that I canceled a group training classes a few months ago, and then I'm closing because the building's being torn down, it's just kind of made it finally unload the stress, the weight on my shoulders. So for me, I finally figured out the biggest stress that I was locked into for so many years is the burden of having a business. So the biking and everything, yes, I had to stop racing for years because I just didn't have anything. And my running is where I noticed the most. And we can talk next time or a little bit about mitochondrial dysfunction, that I'm kind of seeing more research on this. Chronic fatigue isn't just treating my HPA axis. I believe it's more for athletes and myself. It's genetics, the HPA axis, my genetics, and look at your mitochondria function. And so putting those three together with your lifestyle habits is really what I find kind of the healing and rebuilding process that I would work with people on. And it's working for myself. But exercising, it wasn't an option back when this first was 2013-14. I had no energy to bike. And so my workouts, and they tell you to do like 30-45 minutes is what more people specialize in. Chronic fatigue, adrenal issues are just cut your workouts down 45 minutes. You know, over that, you're increasing your cortisol, which is too much stress on your body. So, you know, lifting weights, doing more walking, going for strength training without doing a lot of HIIT training. You just have to change it up a little bit, maybe just a few months. I've obviously dug myself big enough hole and kept taking one step forward, two steps back, that it's taken years to rebuild myself. But that's why I think a lot of people can fix themselves in a month. But if you keep continuing on, not identifying those external stressors, it could be years, like it's been for me.
Did you have to change? You mentioned gut health a moment ago. Yeah. Were you, at that time when you were getting run down, were you following the typical triathlete's diet of lots and lots of carbohydrates, lots of bread, lots of pasta? And did you have to change? Did you find that you were getting any gut intolerance to those? And what changes did you have to make to your nutrition to help improve your health?
Well, that's what I keep speaking of to people. I started doing low carb, high fat before most people did. And before his thing, we were doing metabolic efficiency testing in 2005. I was doing Maffetone heart rate with Mark Allen, 2003. I mean, I was doing all this stuff way before this happened, 2013. So I was doing metabolic efficiency training early on. Then I started more low carb, high fat, zone paleo, kind of back 2005 a little bit more. And then more like 2008, 2009, I, after seminar at Bob Siebehor, and kind of put it all together. It's like, I've figured this out for years and it made sense to me, doing fasted workouts and getting rid of the gels. I was doing UCAN. And so I was doing all that already, is my point. I keep trying to tell people, if you're metabolically efficient and doing low carb, high fat, you think you're fat adapted, you can still have insulin resistance because of this chronic stress. You can still cause fatigue and energy problems because of your chronic stress. So I did not have that. That luckily I already had that fixed, but it didn't really, it probably helped, you know, reduce an oxidative stress on my body by if I was doing high carb and sugar. But I was, once this happens, you get so insulin resistant. I couldn't have any fruit. I had so many food sensitivities that, you know, those different labs that I did too do help to tell you what foods to avoid. But a lot of just any carbohydrate at all, I couldn't take with, like 5 seconds, I get a headache and feel horrible.
Interesting point there. I know you've done some podcasts with Paul Larson and his partner, Dan Plews. And I met Paul in Boulder a couple of years ago at the Training Peaks conference. And him and Dan were experimenting with wearing these little constant glucose monitors.
Yeah.
He was telling me how it wasn't just eating carbohydrates, it was the blood sugar response to stressful incidents. So he said, if you're driving your car down a road and then all of a sudden a dog runs out or a little child runs out and you suddenly get this adrenaline rush, the little app starts bleeping because you've had this sudden spike in blood sugar. Now, if you're talking, you know, if somebody's relating to what you've said about continuous stress, then you can imagine again what the responses are to blood sugar through that, and therefore insulin response, without having to actually eat any carbohydrates. It's just something that's happening because of the way you're responding to incidents and things
exactly.
in your life.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I think it's so fascinating. And I don't think a lot of people realize that. And I spoke on Jimmy Moore's low carb keto cruise in May. And then I went to KetoCon, a lot of the same presenters, and hopefully I will be a presenter next year there. But that's my mission statement to them, was chronic stress impacts the whole you, especially your ability to burn fat. And I keep saying, I was low carb, I am low carb, high fat, your keto, whatever you want to call it, fat adapted. And it would still, until this year, be insulin resistant until I started fasting and working on my mitochondria function. But it is a huge part of it. People don't pay attention to the stress. And I see people stressed out all the time. And so it's really educating people how chronic stress impacts all of you. And that's why I think those glucose meters are great if you could do that. And I know Keto Mojo, I had a great call with them yesterday and I'm going to do some work with them, and they're going to give us some swag for our conference in Kona and my webinar I'm doing. But it's because endurance athletes, I think, need to test and not guess, including their something like Keto Mojo, that you're doing your glucose and ketones, at least measuring ketone or glucose to see if you're burning fat, are you eating the right amount of foods? Because we can tolerate more carbohydrates when we're training high level, but also how's your stress level too? So it's a great way, kind of biohacking in a way, to see, are you doing the right lifestyle and eating habits that are going to help balance your blood sugar?
Quick question here then, Debbie. Everything you've talked about, and you've mentioned monitoring and having your bloods done, but I've got a feeling that if somebody's really paying attention to the messages they're getting from their body, that they would have a fairly good feeling that something's not right just by listening to those, you know, and responding to those signals. So if you're not sleeping, you'd be thinking something's going wrong. If you're constantly feeling like you're wired, if you notice that your resting heart rate's up, that would indicate to most people, unless they're trying to ignore it, that there is something wrong and perhaps they need to change. So is perhaps one of the first lessons that we just need to pay more attention to what our body's telling us.
Exactly what I will be talking about at the seminar and then the free webinar I'm doing end of October is to teach people, here are things you can do right now. You can, what I say, stop, pause, and reset, recalibrate more throughout the day. It's noticing, all right, because we're so gadget people. You know, everyone knows their heart rate. Hopefully you're testing your heart rate variability and you're getting that data so you know what is normal for you when you're healthy. And if you're starting to go down the wrong road and being pushing yourself a little too much, not having those more pauses in between, those little breaks, I think you should be able to pay attention. But I didn't for a long time because I think I wrote this in a blog that we think we're invincible and we're just think
we do Iron Man. We are invincible.
Yeah, we're Iron Man. We're superheroes. We can do anything. And we need to not be, feel like you're a failure or you're lazy or you're pathetic, whatever you want to negative self-talk to yourself because you are cutting down on a workout or taking that as a rest day or going to have a 30-minute nap instead. Or sometimes I go home and just lie down for 10, 15 minutes and just lie in my bed, chill out, then go for my workout. It's you're being lazy by not paying attention to those red flags. So if you want to reprogram your mindset and be more positive that it's okay and give yourself permission to take a little rest or shorten your workout or rearrange your workout schedule based on how you feel, because you know how you feel if you're off and you're not having a great day. And I think it's so many of us push through it and just think, oh, I got to follow my schedule. I got to do this. And so I think it is the first step is those lifestyle habits, but changing your mindset and giving yourself permission to recalibrate more throughout the day, because then you know what happens, your workout is going to be crappy or a garbage workout, or if you took a break and rescheduled it, then you have this amazing workout. So, you know, you'll find out in return that you'll have more performance gains and help your longevity if you listen to your body, what it tells you, because it's pretty smart.
Well, when you hear Dr. Maffetone, Dr. Plews, Professor Larson, Brad Kearns, and just about everybody else who knows exactly what they're talking about, it's very credible, saying that sleep is the most important balancer of all of that training.
Yes.
And at the same time, as a coach, you then get somebody saying, yeah, so I've got a solution side to getting more training in. I'm going to get up an hour earlier. So I do an hour's extra training a day by cutting out an hour's extra sleep. That makes no sense whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And yet the number of people that are going down that road to try to get the training in is just overwhelming sometimes.
Yeah, and that's what sleep for me is priority. And I'm kind of a loser, probably at nighttime. I'd rather go home and get my sleep weeknights when I know I want to feel great the next day. I don't do a lot of social plans. And that's why you end up, most of your friends are athletes, because they get, when you go home at, you know, Friday night, you want to get to bed by 9. So I think sleep is just, if you've gone through what I've gone through and you have those, you know, 2 a.m. wide awake, you know, sleep is essential to your health and you don't sacrifice. If you're going to have to get up in the morning, you got to sacrifice something at nighttime to go to bed early and be on a schedule. You know, you read about the circadian code with Sachin Panda and all these different people about circadian rhythm. It's so essential to stay kind of somewhat of a routine, and getting that sleep and your sleep hygiene, what you do before night, is so critical to your quality of your sleep. And I think a lot of people need to do that, especially like I just had workout at 6 a.m. here at my studio, but we used to do 5:30 a.m. and I condensed two groups into one. I said, you guys can't work out at 5:30. They go to bed at 11 p.m. or midnight. I don't want to train you if you're sleeping 5 hours and you're cutting your sleep short so you can work out. I'd rather you skip my workout and not train with me and go sleep. Yeah. That's how important sleep is.
Are you back to training for triathlon now then, Debbie?
Next year, I did register. I haven't really announced it.
are you going to go to Penticton then? Do I am in Canada?
Yes. I couldn't resist. Are you doing it? Yay! Did you book your place?
Yeah, well, Penticton, 1995. That was so 25 years ago next year. That was my first ever Ironman triathlon.
Yeah.
So
That's the thing, right? You feel connected to it. Like my first race was 2001 there. My last one was 2012.
Yeah. Yeah, so my interesting project now is not to see whether I could go sub 10 hours or set PBs. It's to see whether my 56-year-old self, which is what I've been next year, can beat my 31-year-old self.
There you go. I know. So I did sign up for that just because it was, it's part of history. And if you spin an Ironman world, that's like part of us. And I signed up for Hanu half Ironman, and we're going to Mallorca for cycling week end of June. Oh. So June 21st next year, 2020, you should go to Mallorca and join us for a week cycling.
Well, June 21st, I will be leaving Austria to cycle down through Slovenia to Dubrovnik. We've just arranged our 8-day trip through Europe, and we've done one every year now for the last couple of years. But I will. But I'll be in Mallorca in May for our annual training trip there. It coincides with the 70.3 they have.
That's what we're trying to do. That'll be another time. I love that island. That's just, I love that place. So yes, I am racing next year, and just, you know, it's a lot of it's what we should talk about another time, and is mitochondria function, because I think a lot of athletes, if you read, there's a great blog, Ari Witten's done a lot of stuff that adrenal fatigue is a myth, and it's really the, a lot of research in Dr. Myhill that's by you about mitochondria function, how that is related to our energy production, but chronic fatigue is related to mitochondria dysfunction. And I'm starting to, you know, look at that more and not just look at the HPA axis and figure out the hormone balance over there, but let's work on optimizing your mitochondria with the right supplements and the hormetic stressors and all the stuff we can do to improve our mitochondria. Because for athletes, I think that's essential for improving our performance and, more importantly, longevity, that we're not killing ourselves and speeding up the aging. And, you know, I just had my 30th high school reunion and see how people age.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I want to improve the aging process and get younger, not older, and be able to still do this stuff and travel all over the world when I'm 80 years old. So I think that's it. Mitochondria is something we should, you know, all learn more about.
You want to be Benjamin Button's sister.
Yeah. Not go that young.
So you're going back to racing. So let's finish. I know you've got somebody else coming in 10 minutes. So let's finish off this call by talking about the lessons you've learned, how you introduce this stuff back into your life, and more importantly, what advice you would give to those who are listening who might be suffering from something similar to HPA, or feel like they're going in there, or are recovering from it, but want to make sure they don't go back there. What are the key takeaway points for them?
Well, the free stuff, as we talked about, is more my holistic method, your program, and like in FDN, they call it Dress for Health Success. It's all the same stuff. Work on what you're eating, you know, real food that balances your blood sugar. You know, most of us can do better with a higher fat, protein, and low carb diet, and getting your good nutrients. Number two would be what you're eating, but I keep saying every podcast, every blog, every client, it's not just what we eat, but how we eat it and when we eat it. So I'm really a big fan of intermittent fasting, time-restricted eating, having that more time during the day to digest your food and break it down, and working on improving your sleep, not eating 3 hours before bed really helps me. So that kind of goes with the 16-hour overnight fast. So getting your sleep quality is really important. But back to digestion is really working on slowing down. Oh. I think so many people try to do more keto, low carb, high fat. It's getting more popular, but they're not eating correctly. They're not eating, sitting down, focused, and relaxed. I always tell people, you're in Italy on vacation. You know, you're in Europe. People eat slowly. They take 2 hours. We eat in our car, eating while they're at their desk. So I think changing how you're eating, make sure when you're eating, you're focused on eating, you're chewing your food, you're not multitasking. You have to be in the parasympathetic nervous system to eat. You can't eat and digest your food, you're parasympathetic.
Yeah, I call that mindless eating. We're just doing it without thinking, and you just open your mouth and it's like a conveyor belt of food going in there without...
You don't even know you're eating.
Breath. Yeah, and before you've... and the interesting thing is I had a challenge recently, and that was one of the key lessons they teach in precision nutrition. So as a coach, a nutrition coach, that's one of the key things we get people to try and do is eat slowly and to leave the table when you feel like you're 80% full, which those were two of the hardest things for people to get. Mm-hmm. But one thing I did hear back from people was that they started observing others around them eating, and they were horrified at how fast some people ate the food. It was like one, they'd inhaled it.
You know, and the people that I have that struggle with their weight, I've seen how they eat. Yeah. I've been out with them. Like, I know I can help you. they keep changing what they're eating and working on that, but they eat so fast and they just throw the food down and they inhale it. And you can, it's like, you have to somehow point that out to people. And a simple way, I just tell people, take 3 deep breaths before you start grabbing a bite, and do that old fashioned, you know, fork down method you learn in Weight Watchers or something. It's like, put the fork down, don't take another bite until you've done chewing your food. But so many people don't even finish chewing before they put another bite in. So that's a free thing.
I think we should get everybody to try and eat the food with chopsticks. That would slow them down.
That is a good tip. You know, I've heard that before, and I tried doing that. If there is chopsticks, it takes me forever. Like if you're eating vegetables or something hard to eat, but chopsticks is a great secret. I've said
you get bored before you get to the end of the day. You're just like, oh, take it away.
The last thing I'll throw in is that sleep, though, as you said as well, that sleep is the thing. I would make sure, you know, if you know you're working out at 5 a.m. and that's the only thing you could do, if you can move it to the afternoon, that'd be great. But you have to backtrack and go to bed earlier. I get ready for bed around 7:30 at night. And my husband does too now. And then so I try to read 3 pages or more. And I just have your little ritual at night to help kind of get off electronics. I don't do emails. I think that's another thing, is to schedule when you do emails or when you're on social media, because it's so easy to get sucked in and do that all day long. So I think turning off your phone or putting in airplane mode, but shut it off after 7 p.m. or 6, whatever you can do to help your sleep and just try to connect with the people you're with and relax a little bit more. But sleep, digestion is huge. Obviously, identifying your external stressors, internal stressors, you need to do lab testing. So we call it the hidden stressors, which impact your hormones, immune, hidden. So diet or detoxification, digestion, and energy and nervous systems are the hidden internal stressors that need lab testing for. And then you clinically correlate all that together to heal. But it's healing, rebuilding from taking all this information together. That's why it's, you know, the whole metabolic chaos. And I always think of it as, you know, being an investigator, helping guide a client to rebuilding the whole athlete. But it's a puzzle. It's putting pieces of the puzzle together. And there isn't one size fit all approach. It's just, let's work on each person individually. So if you can find someone that can help you do that, you know, you can do the lifestyle habits on your own. I think finding, you know, you or I or some coach that can help you with lifestyle habits to get you started, you know, is a great step. And doing group online challenges helps, but everyone's so individual. So it's, you know, you have to invest some money in it too. It costs money and it's not covered by insurance here. And you have to really be motivated to get yourself healthy.
No, it's not covered by insurance here either, Debbie. But I do think that, you know, we're all conversant with the idea of putting money into a fiscal pension that we can draw on when we get older to you know, supplement a comfortable lifestyle. But yeah, what we're talking about here, and you talk about the aging process and going back to your 30-year school reunion, we're talking about a physical pension here. We're talking about the idea of investing money or time and effort into something that is us, not some external, you know, thing that we can purchase with money, but something that we're living in and that will carry us through either in a decrepit state, so we need to be at home with a nurse as we get older, or when we can look after ourselves and do the things we want to. So yes, we're really taking the time and money to invest in ourselves so that we can enjoy that longevity that you talk about.
Yeah, I wasn't able to have kids, which is probably part of my infertility, part of the metabolic chaos was a big red flag I look back to now. But now I have to be healthy because I don't have anyone to look after us when we're older.
Me too. Hey, yeah. Listen, Debbie, I really appreciate you coming back on. It's great to get a little bit more insight into that HPA axis syndrome. I've got a feeling that there'll be a lot of people listening to this who either touched on that or suffered from it greatly. And I think they'll be really interested to hear your insights into how you diagnosed it and what you've done to change your life and what they can do to either protect themselves from that in the future or you know, just to carry on enjoying sport and making sure that they live a healthy and
you have to be serious about it. You have to really feel kind of bottom of the barrel to dig yourself out and feel better, but it is a lot of work. You have to be ready for it.
Okay, well, listeners, thanks very much for listening again. Debbie Potts, thank you so much for joining us. I know you've got a busy day, so I'm going to let you go,
but
look forward to seeing you again some other time.
All right. We'll see you in Kona for our little low carb athlete, fat adapted athlete webinar. And
sure will.
Wednesday in October. So see you then.
We'll do a recording from there so we can share it with these listeners.
Yeah. Lava Java.
Okay. Take care.
Bye, thank Debbie. You.
Right then, that's a wrap for this week. Thanks again for listening. As always, I appreciate that you have plenty of choice out there in podcast land, so it does mean an awful lot to me when you come back regularly. If you enjoyed the podcast, please could you hop onto iTunes or Podbean and leave a rating and a comment if you can. Apparently, it's really good for the ratings, although to be absolutely honest with you, I have no idea how they work these things out. If you like the way I roll and you find some synergy with my approach to life and sport, maybe be interested in joining my SWAT Inner Circle training group. If you are, please just email beth@thetriathloncoach.com for more details. You can also use that email address to ask for my special free gift, which I have for you, which are my top 25 tips on how to be a high performance human. Okay, that's all for this week. I'll be back next week with another great guest. So for now, enjoy the rest of your week.